ESPN Seattle.
This is Brock and Salk
from the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming everywhere at 710sports.com and the 710 Seattle app.
Which box is it?
All right, final hour here with Brock and Salk on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Check the box.
710sports.com. Well, we're proud to sponsor the 84th annual MTR Western Sports Star of the Year Awards. The show happens next Thursday, week from tonight, February 7th at the Sheraton Grand Seattle. Join the Seattle Sports Commission in celebrating the great moments in sports from 2018 and beyond. Find tickets and info and vote all at 710sports.com/events. We're going to go deeper into a few different subjects. If you are watching online at 710sports.com, hopefully you can see the beautiful display of red glassy babies in front of us, Brock. What do you think?
I think it's phenomenal. I feel, think
classing
I feel,
up the studio.
I feel like I'm at home. I think that's one of Molly's favorite glassy babies.
There we go.
Something her.
I feel like we should start playing romantic music.
We may. We actually,
These we could do that for Going Deeper. I wouldn't have a problem
with that.
I've
got some music for Going Deeper. Don't worry. Do? These are the Valentine's.
So one
candles.
Thing you and Heather and Molly very much share in common. Heather's a glassy baby
sure.
as well, huh?
Well, why not?
That's
who doesn't
awesome.
Like them? We got them all over our house. So
beautiful.
All right, glassybaby.com. Brock, dig deeper into three different subjects. Let's start with this one, because this has been on your mind ever since you heard Coach Hop say it the other day. He believes that a team needs to, fit with and represent the city in which they play.
I think, you know, a team always has to reflect the city. And the great thing about Seattle, it's about great people, blue collar. Even though there's a lot of wealth, there's a lot of blue collar mentality. And that's what's really inspiring to me. And so, you know, people want a team that they can embrace and connect with, a team that plays together. They sacrifice a little bit for each other, but they play with that chip on their shoulder. And, you know, nothing's greater than to go watch a team that fights and fights for each other and fights for their school and alumni base.
Do you think that's accurate?
Well, before we dig into all of these different angles, my mind races a million miles an hour. I guess it might be healthiest to, and to answer that right there is accurate. How would you characterize this fan base? How would you characterize the Pacific Northwest
fan
base?
It's definitely blue collar.
Well, in Puyallup and in Bonnie Lake and in Canton and Auburn and in lots of those locales with a lot of the Seahawk fans, I would say, yeah, I think that if you looked at the demographics of Seahawk fans, I would put a lot of blue collar in it.
There's some.
As he said,
but there certainly is a lot of wealth as well. That's a tough way to describe Seattle. I don't think I can buy that. Maybe he's confusing blue collar with new money. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's new money is definitely a better description of this town than blue collar.
Yes.
But of course there's going to be blue collar people in it. So it's not like, by saying that the overall vibe of the city is new money, if you are a blue collar person, I'm not minimizing who you are and what you do. Just I don't think that you could, like, Detroit, Pittsburgh have blue collar. That's what defines those towns.
Seattle's known as a tech hub.
Seattle is not nationally
known. Wait, but when you talk about those cities, you're talking about the history of that city.
Yes.
And you would say that, like, in the history of Seattle that they've been blue collar?
It has never been nationally known as a blue collar
town. Like Boeing. It's always been innovation, pushing the envelope with technology.
There's a lot of blue collar people here, but it is not the defining characteristic nationally of what people think of when it comes to Seattle.
No, but when you live here, you understand that element of this society.
But what he's describing is a city. Every city has a blue collar element to it. If that's going to be your description, okay, then great. Yes, Seattle is a city.
Mm-hmm.
And in that it is a city or a region or anywhere in the country, it has a blue-collar, there's a blue-collar faction to it.
Part of that blue-collar element of this city that we've talked about a lot is that it's not pumping up your own brand. It's not flashing. It's not rolling around in your Maseratis everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
It's having that understated belief, that blue-collar type mentality that I do my work and I work hard in my lane.
Yeah, it's I know, and I don't want to get...
Seattle is go outside, go for a hike. Make sure that that you're not creating a carbon footprint.
It's fans. Maybe that's what the city is. He's talking about it's fans.
The University of Washington.
Sports fans.
He says that it needs to represent the city. The city. Look, man, I don't want to be disagreeable, but come on. That is not the representation of Seattle.
So the reason, let me take this a bunch
and
of different places.
And even less so UW.
Let me take this a bunch of different places.
And by its very nature and everything you've told me, that does not represent
Damon
UW.
Feels very strongly, and I do too, and I've kind of come to the side with him, that Bill Belichick worked in New England a whole lot better than he did in Cleveland or he would in Seattle because just his nature fits the people there. He is demanding. He is opinionated. He doesn't really care about other people's opinion. He is driven and wired that way. And fortunately, in Damon's mind, found a quarterback that was equally yoked in that way. Now, the QB grew up in California. He went to Michigan. But just his hardwiring, he doesn't care. He likes it difficult. He likes it demanding. You know, I was listening to a Patriot player this week that said, man, there were a lot of talented guys, much more talented than me, that came in, couldn't handle it. Couldn't handle Bill. Couldn't handle the pressure of the environment. Couldn't handle the miserable workplace.
Yeah.
And, you know, when I've been in the Northeast at times,
there's some of that fit.
The workplace can be miserable.
There's some of that fit. But if he hadn't won, then it wouldn't have worked. I mean, it only happens that way because he won.
Understood, but there is a connection there that fits. Pete Carroll didn't fit in New York. He didn't fit in New England. His hardwiring in the way that he goes and his incredible positivity
sure.
didn't fit there.
Right.
You know where it fits
much,
beautifully? It fits
in the blue collar Northwest.
It fits beautifully
West Coast,
in,
for sure.
in the West Coast
well,
and
that's
in
true.
Seattle in particular.
But that's not blue collar. That's what doesn't fit about Pete.
So blue collar is probably not the word.
Well, because blue collar is what you tell people in order to make them feel good.
I think just kind of a work ethic. I think a real commitment to it. And as far as its fans go, and I've always said this, and when it comes to Husky fans and Seahawks fans, maybe more so than Mariner fans or Sounders or other ones that may be more emblematic of the city. But when I think of those fan bases, I think of toughness. I think that they love defense. I think Don James flourished here for decades because they like that. Jim Owens, right? The fishermen and the blue-collar workers on the outside of the city limits. They like a lot of that. I like a lot of that understated. And did Richard and crew come and rock that boat a little bit with Pete? Sure they did. Sure they did. So I may be talking a little bit out of both sides, but I do really believe that having a connection and in a hardwiring that's kind of familiar with that place
is
important.
I guess I'm not going to fully agree with you here. Yes, I do think you're talking a little bit out of both sides. And I don't mean to just be critical. I'll give some more positive here in a moment. But this idea that UW fits with any sort of a blue-collar, grind-it-out mentality, this is a place where they sailgate. People bring their yachts to the game. It is, I mean, they say bow down and come sailgate. I mean, if anything, it is a Baroque.
Wine
this is.
Cheese.
Sorry, man.
Oh, so this is going to get to be a takedown of
I'm
UW.
I'm on my yacht. I've got my pinkies up.
Oh, I see what this
up.
Is going to get
to. Go to the game.
Oh, this isn't about the city or the fans. This is going to try to be to get to a takedown of UW.
No, it's just
no,
a takedown of you.
And said UW is a blue-collar university.
I texted Mike Hopkins' point about it being a fit with its fan base, that you got to know it, and is it incredibly wealthy? Sure.
You wrote UW is wealthy, but still a blue-collar work ethic.
Yeah, there is. There is.
Around, but... To a point, I agree with you. There's a lot of blue-collar people around Seattle, and
yep.
certainly the dock workers and the fishermen, the fishing community.
A lot of folks that fill up the stadiums.
And some of that, absolutely.
A lot of the folks that fill up those
but
stadiums.
But like they're most famous for people taking yachts.
But you just have to decide whether
man.
It's
like,
royalty and sailgating or
right.
whether it's blue-collar, hard-work lunch pail.
You can't have it all. It's the same as
both.
It's the same as the UW is a top 10 job, but they don't have all the same advantages of everybody else in the top 25.
Look, every
just
kingdom
and
has
pick
a king
one side.
At the top, has yeah. lots of wealth, and everybody else doesn't have the wealth. I think this is the exact same situation.
Think so?
Most of the people who follow this team aren't yep. in that situation.
That's right.
There you go. Howdy views UW as a kingdom. Brock views it as blue collar.
Most.
There's the difference.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
Just choose one. That's all I think Kyle and I are saying, because that,
yeah,
that's
I
what
I would say
you.
The majority.
Yeah,
the majority aren't coming in on their yacht. That's what I would say. I'd say the majority of the 70,000 that fill up that stadium come demographically from outside the city limits. That's what I would say. So, and I can get the numbers for you and prove that if you want me to. But
no,
I would
I just
say
want you to decide.
That's what I've decided, that the majority of the fan base absolutely, absolutely has a blue collar work ethic. Yeah, there is a big part of new money. Yes, there's certainly some Bellevue in it. Yes, there are certainly a lot of yachts. Yes, there is a percentage of that brings that to the table. No question about it. But the vibe and of the fan base, when I ran out of that tunnel, maybe it's different 20 years later. When I ran out of that tunnel, you know what I felt? I felt like Puyallup. I felt Kent. I felt Auburn. I felt East, you know.
You think you'd still feel that
Bellingham.
Now?
I don't know. That's what I felt then. So maybe I'm
still
a little
feel
biased.
It now? I'm curious. And I don't know. Look, it's just hard to steal that mentality when you think about, you know, what's going on across the SEC and you know, even the Big 12, and the Big 10. I don't know, man. It's a little hard for me to just fully buy into that.
Okay, but beyond
what I will
that,
say
but
about
beyond
this
that,
about Seattle,
beyond
and this
UW
is why the Seahawks have always fit and why UW can fit at times too. This is the positive. What Seattle is an event town. This is a big event town. If you want to talk about fitting into this atmosphere, Pete Carroll doesn't fit here, Brock, because of his laid-back Californianess. That is not why Pete fits in Seattle. Pete fits because he's a big event guy. Because he's a bring in the celebrity power and make something an event. And Seattle, more than anything else, is a sports town. And not even just, it's just in general, is a town for big events. When Adele tickets go on sale, everybody in Seattle has to have one.
But Adele doesn't really play in Seattle often. Key Arena sometimes, but it's really like Tacoma.
It blew up when she played those dates at Key Arena. I get it.
Twice.
Accidentally. It became a big thing. Right? When Jay-Z and Beyonce play it, it just becomes a big thing. Seattle is an event town. And when the Mariners were an event, everybody showed up and they banged out that park for how many straight years and set attendance records. And when the Seahawks became an event, everyone went to CenturyLink, and that's why that whole thing works. It is a big event town. Pete Carroll embraced that. When the Huskies are going right, they turn Husky Stadium into an event. And that's why, Brock, you can have both sailgating and people coming from all over who can't even come close to affording a sailboat or any sort of yacht, even a small little dinghy like Danny's been taking over to the games.
And beyond
because
that?
Because they're there for the big event.
Okay, I'll give you some of that. It's also a positivity town.
That's true.
Okay, Pete Carroll fits here because of his positivity. It's not a negative town. It's not Philly. It's not Boston. It's not Detroit. It's not any of those.
That is definitely true. Yes. It's positivity well over negativity.
Chris Peterson fits here because there is a positivity. Jen Cohen, the more I think about what Doug Gottlieb said.
It's why I've decided to make my home here and have had so much success in this morning show. It's about positivity.
Yes.
It's a natural fit.
For sure. Well, that's one topic. We could do this probably for 45 minutes.
Is that what Seattle is, though? Is it a positivity town and an event town?
Yeah, people could text in 710-710.
Of all the things, I think those would be the things we could agree on the most. We can go back and forth on blue collar, white collar, we can go back and forth on new money, old money, all that stuff. But at its core, what brings Seattle sports fans together? Events.
Well, what else is interesting is it's media, right? Which we are a part of. It's media is so unlike a lot of media in other markets. Like when we just bring these different people on, right? Whether it's at Super Bowl or otherwise, and this town doesn't like its media to talk about themselves either. Or really anybody hardly or largely to talk about themselves. Maybe Earl and Richard, we could live with that a little bit, but it doesn't like a lot of that grandstanding. And Pete doesn't do it. And Peterson doesn't do it. And any of these managers, they've not had a lot to stand up, but they don't necessarily do it. There's just,
You don't think Pete does that?
I don't think Pete has nearly the ego and to talk about all of his accomplishments.
But hold on, it's not accomplishments, but come on, man. I love Pete, and this is not a takedown of him, but I don't necessarily agree with all that.
Really?
The way Pete talks about how they tackle differently and better than everybody else, the way Pete loves to talk about everything that they've done, in looking at grit and how they're on the forefront of looking. I'm sorry, I love him, and I respect all those qualities, but I don't know that I could say he's a, don't make this about me entirely guy. I don't think that's entirely true.
I think he could be 100 times more. I think he could talk about his accomplishment an awful, awful lot, and very rarely do we hear about his dynasty at USC or being the greatest coach this market has ever, ever had.
Text message. Salk, how do you accidentally go to two Adele concerts? Well, I only went to one. I had tickets for night two. I just thought they were for night one. By the way, second time that it happened, if you've heard, listen to the show for a while, I did that years ago when I tried to take my wife to the opera for her birthday and showed up Saturday for opening night at the opera, which of course had been Friday and didn't get to go.
How's that happen?
So get this. I just made the mistake again. I meant to tell you this.
Oh,
thankfully, I caught it this time.
What?
But your memory's on point. Don't worry about
this. I don't know how I did this. So once a year, Heather and I, this is going to continue to, you can play the more of the Baroque music if you need to. Heather and I like to go to the symphony once a year. I love going to the symphony once a year. And so we were going to go see, I forget who we're going to see. It might be Bach, actually. And so.
Lovely performance.
Lovely. Lovely. And so they had $29 tickets at Seattle Symphony, which is great. So real cheap tickets, which is awesome. And so I went, I bought tickets. We're going to go Saturday night. It was the whole thing. They delivered my ticket. We got four tickets, two for us, two for our friends, and didn't think anything of it. And a couple weeks later, I was like, I better go check to just make sure it's on my calendar so I don't forget it. Yeah, I bought them for Thursday night.
That's why they were $29.
No, I was able to switch them. They were $29 both nights. Oh, but okay. What is wrong with me?
I don't know.
Why can't I buy tickets at the correct night of anything?
That's three times.
Yes.
Bro. What?
You sure you booked your flights to Phoenix for the right day?
No, I'm not sure at all.
Are you definitely going to Phoenix tomorrow?
I hope so. I really do. I need to. No, I'm not going on Saturday. It's not tomorrow.
Are you sure?
It's not until Saturday.
I thought you said Friday.
No, it's Saturday, Kyle. How dare you? All right, Aaron Goldsmith was on with us earlier this week, Brock, and mentioned that Raul Ibanez was the last great Mariner leader. Now, here's what he said.
Is Raul Ibanez the last guy who was the real, like, leader for the Mariners in terms of he has the resume? Now, in his last tour of duty with the Mariners, he was obviously up there in years, but he was productive offensively in many ways, but and also was a vocal guy. I mean, I think that's something that if I am Jerry DePoto or Scott Servais, that's something that I'm also really craving, is the guy who can be a leader on both fronts.
You were pretty shocked that Raul Ibanez could be the last guy. Is that, I just got to ask before you dig into it, is that because you're thinking of Raul Ibanez the first time he was here or the second? It's only been 5 years.
I am just thinking how bereft of any influencers they have had. And how is that even possible? How every one of these skips have all come in here and said largely the same thing to us. Right? That Lloyd McClendon and Eric Wedge and Don Wakamatsu, like all of like, I just need that edge, man. I just need that leadership. And, you know, I'm reading a book by Tony Dungy right now that I'm really enjoying. And you know, one of Tony's things, and he didn't say it necessarily when he led us, but looking at it now and reading the words, he's absolutely right. Like, the great leaders are influencers. I want the people around me to be so positively impacted and influenced and better because of my existence as a coach or as a manager or as a teammate. And how is it possible that, I think he's right. That's not a rip on Raul. Who have been their leaders and influencers? Who has made, can you sit there and say, yeah, that guy made the clubhouse better. Look at the impact. Look at the long-lasting impact of that guy. Why is it so hard in baseball? We feel it in football. We felt it with a number of these guys through the years with the Seahawks. Pete even talking about it, that the mastery that these guys had and what they passed down and the warrior mentality that, you know what, J.R. Sweezy plays with a broken foot because that guy played with a torn labrum and that guy played with a torn elbow and that guy competes this way at practice because he watched that guy and they were so influenced by them. Mm. Why is it so hard to find influencers
I think there's a lot
in
of
this organization, or maybe it's a bigger picture in baseball?
I think it's because 5 years is not that long. I mean, it's been a couple of years, and it was sort of Cano's clubhouse, and he wasn't that guy, and that makes it confusing. But I think it's a problem throughout baseball. I think that's a search throughout baseball because of, well, there's a lot of factors. One, I think, is just going to be the language factor. I think it's really hard where clubhouses are split along language lines, not racial, not location, language. Hmm. And I think it is one of the harder things to overcome. You've talked a lot, Brock, about your experiences going to the NFL, first in college, but even more so in the NFL, and being around people from all different parts of the country and different backgrounds, and how much it have, you know, changed your scope and your view. Yeah. Imagine how much harder that would have been if a third to a half of them spoke different languages.
Well, I've experienced it going into Dominican and El Salvador over the last few years. Right, you want to pour in and do the work and connect, and it's much, much harder to connect right in that way when you don't speak the language.
If you go back before, first of all, Raul Ibanez speaks a couple languages, right?
Yep.
Go back before Raul, who was one of the better leaders in our first couple of years here, Mike Sweeney. Mm-hmm. What does Mike Sweeney do? Speaks fluent Spanish in addition to English. I mean,
little Joey
Cora. Do you ever think that's kind of interesting? I was talking to my mom the
Dave
other day,
Alley.
Since we've talked about or
Mike
we've heard
Lowell,
about English classes that all of these, you know, English as a second language players take. Do you think it would be interesting if baseball players also had to take a Spanish class?
Yes.
Just help them relate to their other teammates.
And some do. And the guys who, honestly, the guys who are truly bilingual, I think tend to be the better leaders in baseball. It's not 100%. Obviously, Derek Jeter is, you know, the world-renowned Derek Jeter, the greatest leader of all time or whatever. Blah, blah, blah. But when I've been around people, Mike Lowell was as good a leader as I've been around. Mm. Cuban-born, grew up in the States, speaks fluent English, fluent Spanish, able to bring people together inside a clubhouse.
Yep.
And I've talked to other ballplayers who have said the same thing, that if you have a group, and it's not just the English-speaking guys who need to be able to accept the Spanish-speaking guys. Sometimes it's a Spanish-speaking guy who breaks away from a clique and says, no, I'm going to come watch Modern Family with you or whatever, or come listen to your music. Or those things are so important in baseball in terms of the leadership because, you know what? Everyone's got their guy. Everyone's got their system. Everyone's got their track man. Everyone's got their data. It's largely an individual one-on-one sport, mm-hmm. but it needs to be played together as a team.
Yep.
And it takes somebody who can truly reach everyone in the clubhouse and bring them out of their shell and bring them out of their cliques to actually make a team a team.
Yeah, I think that specialization has played a huge role over the last decade or two as well. Those things that you just referenced right there. I got my own swing coach. I got my own fielding coach. I got my own pitching coach. I got my own metrics. I got my own numbers. I got all my own things that I am so hyper-focused on there. You think those guys had that 25 years ago when they're in the clubhouse? No. Now they're sitting there playing cards and they're bonding. And I don't know. Obviously, there have been language barriers for decades and decades and decades. And none of that is new in baseball. But you just did not have your specialization,
no, but you know
the
what?
Individualization.
You know what, though? The language thing has changed, though. I think the reality of it. In the early years of having a lot of Spanish-speaking players in the clubhouse, I think a lot of the writers and a lot of people just sort of cast those people aside. They were just marginalized.
Hmm.
Like, well, yeah, the leadership is being done by the English speakers for the English guys. And that doesn't, it's not saying that was okay, but I think that's a lot of how it was viewed. And I think some of those other players felt marginalized and felt like they were on the sidelines and weren't really a part of what that team was doing.
Why don't we send Lydia and Kyle? I think Lydia's mom's onto something. Why don't you guys be the kind of liaisons for the English speaking guys to help them? How beneficial would that be in a clubhouse? If you said, hey, guys, we're going to do this on both sides. You know, you're going to learn to speak English, you know, when it's not your first language, which is second language. You're going to work to do your very best so we can communicate. And by the way, English-speaking guys, you're going to learn some Spanish.
I'll tell you what, if I were a person with a chance to be a major league catcher, I'd be learning Spanish. I would make it a requirement as a potential major league catcher that you speak fluent Spanish.
Mm.
And quite frankly, I'd be working on a little beginner's knowledge of Japanese.
Mm.
Maybe even Korean. I think that position especially has to touch so many different people that if you can't communicate with them, I would think it would be a major problem.
Well, hopefully this Jared Kelenic, who, by the way, I was reading through Keith Law's top 100 prospects, maybe we'll hit on his three guys tomorrow, right? Because you've got three Mariners in his top 100. And as I was reading Keith Law's kind of comments on Dunn, and on Kelenic, hopefully Kelenic is that guy. He's just that igniter. He is just that kid that wants to relate to everybody. Yeah. I know he is going to be a few years away, but he's so dynamic. He's so competitive. He is such an influencer and has been at the lower levels he's played in. Hopefully he can bring some of that.
Text message, Salk, how dare you? Your problem with tickets? My gosh. In your work life, you spend your entire time trying to correct everybody to your line of thinking. In your life, you're dumb. Yeah, pretty much. I would say that you've got me pegged. Thank you. I would say that's as well summed up as any text we've ever gotten. Yes. In this show, I try to correct everybody and let them see the light and understand that I'm correct.
Yes.
In the rest of my life, I'm just dumb. Yeah, you've got it. You've got it down pretty much perfectly.
That is kind of sad. It's not once or twice, a third time.
Don't worry about that.
You're better than that.
You know, Brock, I said don't worry about it. SI headline, thank you to somebody for texting this in. This comes from the 425. Derek Jeter is requiring Spanish instruction for English-speaking players in Miami.
Yep.
Now, I don't know whether that's entire. I haven't read the whole thing yet. I don't know if that's just because...
That's what great leaders do, Mike.
...of the city they're in and how many Spanish-speaking people are in Miami in general, if it's a marketing thing.
Mm-hmm.
But hey, I'm with him, as much as I don't like
him. Way to go, Jeter. There
By the
go.
Way, go in Jeets. Spanish, like, a little easier to learn than English, too.
Not for
so
me.
So not that difficult.
Not for me.
Well, you've never had to
learn English as an adult. No, remember.
When you tried to learn Spanish in college, it went poorly.
When you're dumb outside of your job, then you file for things like
language learning disability. That's right. I got my language learning disability. So I would just show that to Derek Jeter if I played on the Marlins and say, hey, I can't do this. Sorry, Jeets. I got a language learning disability. Sorry, Jeets. That's not bad. All right. Brock's got one more topic he wants to go deeper on, and it involves his favorite person in the whole wide world. It's next. I'm Brock and Salk.
Brock and Salk.
From the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Here are your hosts, Brock Heward and Mike Salk.
Adele?
Mm-hmm. You should know this. You went to her concert.
I saw
her.
I've been to multiple concerts.
Well, I only got into one. The only thing I really remember is that girl going down and spilling both of her beers right next to me. That was That was one of the craziest things.
What was the other thing
with
the concert? Like, you didn't get in? It was a fake ticket or something like that?
My buddy's ticket. Yeah. We went to go see Greta Van Fleet a couple weeks ago.
It's just horrible.
And when I got there, his ticket had already been scanned, according to the thing.
Wow.
So I gave him my ticket and I didn't go, and he went instead of me.
All right. So we dug deeper on a couple topics.
Yes.
I apologize for some of you out there if it gets a little too deep and too heated, but we talked about the connection to a fan base. We talked about leadership or the lack of influencers in the clubhouse. Here's the last thing I was thinking about. Is it possible that Russell Wilson grew the most this year in his voice and presence than he ever has? That even in year 7 of his career, that we actually got to see him, not as a player, not in everything he did touchdown-wise and his beautiful throws down the field and all the stats that we highlighted throughout the season. Is it possible that this year that you actually look back and say, you know what, Russell, he grew the most in his just comfort of his own skin and voice and presence. And because of it, well, guess what? ESPN hired him to do Gruden stuff, the QB to QB work. And now CBS has hired him to do pregame shows. That there is just more of a comfort level. And that we may actually see Russell over the years be, I don't know, as they say on the East Coast, a little more human. We say human on the West Coast, but a little more human and just a little bit more ethos and just a little bit more kind of relationship that way, and maybe less robotic. Is that possible here as we watch Russell in the years ahead?
No. I hate to pull a Groz, but no, I didn't see that at all.
You didn't see that or feel that at all?
Nope.
This little light of mine with Doug, this didn't just...
Little light of mine, I'm going to let it shine. Hey, this little light of mine, I'm going to let it shine. This little light of mine, I'm gonna let it shine, let it shine, let it shine, let it shine.
Woo! Let's go get it, baby. Let's go do it. Come on. That was the Baptist version. That was the Southern Baptist version right there.
Nope. Nope. Sorry. I love you and I love these conversations and I love going deeper with you, but I don't see any of that. I just don't see it at all.
I could get on board with that, Brock. He filled a lot of the void from the last offseason with the veteran departures, Russell Wilson. I think he stepped into that void, and I felt like, with no way to prove this, that his teammates gained a little more respect.
Yeah,
that part may be true.
You're not going to believe it.
I think removing some of the barriers to them respecting him probably helped this year. But I don't know that Russell grew into being a new type of person.
So why did CBS hire him for this Super Bowl? Because he hasn't been on pregame shows over the last few years before Super Bowls. So why did ESPN
say... Do you think it's just CBS's view and not just Russell's view?
I don't know.
You think Russell all of a sudden wanted to do it instead of CBS? I mean, CBS hasn't had a Super Bowl in 3 or 4 years. It's not.
Yeah, I mean, it revolves, but it could have been Fox. It could have been... Was there just a little more humanity in some of these settings? I would imagine, and you could talk to Dave Wyman about this or others, when you sit in a production meeting, and we've had different guys through the years, and, you know, you sit in production meetings with Russell, and I bet you from year 1 to 2 versus what it was over the last couple, and this year in particular, I bet there was a lot more humanity. I bet there was more transparency, just kind of more trust in it, in, you know, yourself and what you've done over 6 or 7 years. And you're right. Some of those other barriers that did a lot of the talking and some of those other guys that kind of minimized and called out what Russell wasn't
I think that is so much bigger than whatever it is you're pointing to. Could there have been some? Yes, maybe you're right. But I think that the removal of some of those other barriers to his success in terms of leadership were so much more important than any personal growth of his own.
Probably. I would probably tend to agree with that as well, but I'm not going to limit it and say he didn't also grow a little bit and say, you know what? Yeah, without some of these other voices here, I got a little opportunity. And maybe I will be a little more real with some of these dudes. Because I think that's what Doug has asked for all of these years.
True.
I think Doug has always asked for a little more vulnerability. He's always asked to be a little bit more real. He's always asked, right? And sometimes even barked at him in that way. And I don't know. It just felt this year that there was more growth. And I don't want to limit it. I don't want to say he's always just going to be one way. He's always going to be just the canned response.
That stuff I think I can buy. I don't know that I buy looking at him doing the CBS pregame show as any example of that.
Okay.
Yeah, I think your overall point. Could Russell have grown as a leader this year? Yes. Could his voice have been a little bit more real in that locker room? Yes.
And can it keep growing in that
I think all those things are probably true. Yes, you would absolutely convince me of that. I don't think you're going to convince me that him doing the Gruden football camp or quarterback camp or him doing the CBS pregame show is in any way related to that. to me, that's just the other arm of Russell, the PR wing of Russell Wilson, that I don't know that I'm nearly as big a fan of.
Yeah, probably. That's probably fair. It just got me thinking that he's unlimited himself. I'm not going to limit it and
don't
say the Russell
him.
That we will know, and if an extension gets done for the years and the years and the years ahead, is always going to be the same guy. That there can be a little bit of Matt Hasselbeck. There can be a little bit more vulnerability.
He can teach his boy Sherm a little bit about what it's like to play in the NFL and how people root for
Sherm's
root for people.
Very vulnerable. He's very transparent.
He is. That's for sure.
He's very consistent.
He's so mad, man. It's amazing that you mad bro guy is as mad as he is. And tweeting last night about how angry he was about loyalty in sports. Player leaves team for another team and their selfish traitor, egotistical drama. Team cuts or trades player and it's a business decision best for the team or smart. Yes, of course that's how it goes.
Yeah.
We like teams. That's why we like the player. Did he think Seahawks fans would have been Richard Sherman fans if he had started his career with the Niners? They'd hate him.
Mm-hmm.
They would all universally hate him because of the uniform he wore.
Yep.
Then once you come here, then it becomes a conversation about how endeared you are, and certainly the way you leave and the way you behave while you're here will factor in.
Well,
but does he think everybody is naturally a Richard Sherman fan no matter where he goes? That's just not the way sports have been played and rooted for decades, if not hundreds of years.
He's a very bright guy. There is no question about that. Richard is a very bright guy. But in his world, he sees this as total hypocrisy, that for some reason and somehow these fans have to be just all in on you, whether you're here or you're just when you're here, they're fanatical about you.
Yes.
When you're not here and you're gone and you put your agenda ahead of the team's, they're going to root for the team. They're going to look out for the team.
They're always going to choose the team over you.
They're not going to choose. And in his world, it's the billionaires versus the millionaires. They're not choosing for the billionaires or Jerry Jones or Paul Allen. They're rooting for that uniform and that team in that city and in that community.
Yes.
That's what they're rooting
for. Yes, and ultimately, when it comes down to the strike or the lockout or the labor dispute that is going to occur in a couple of years, in that case, sides will be drawn. And there will be people who will be rooting for the billionaires and others who will be rooting for the millionaires. And Richard, if you come ask me at that point, I'll be on your side. Because I think what the owners have done to the Player Association is brutal in the NFL. But until then, I'm going to root for my team, not for the player.
And everybody has rushed Richard to the front of this line, and he's been very active as a player rep and a union rep and said, oh, he's going to be the guy. He's going to be right on the shoulder, whether that's Demaurice Smith, who I would recommend it's not, because I look at his job over the last decade, but whoever it's going to be. And I would have grave concerns if I was a player because I think Richard lives in the world, in his world, and that's the world that he knows, and it's deeply personal, and everything is personal against him.
Yeah.
And I just don't know, as far as players go, if I want somebody that's lived in the 20% with no understanding of the 80% of the minimum.
I think you also don't know how much of what he says is posturing, though, because I see a lot of this as posturing before that big fight and maybe not actually what he – because I think he's such a smart guy. He has to understand this at his core. He has to understand that people live in cities, those cities have teams, and people cheer for those teams more than they cheer for whatever player happens to be there, and that when players move on or retire or traded, et cetera, you move on to the next player. He has to understand that. So I have to assume that a lot of this is just posturing, that it's not real, that he knows what he's posturing before this big fight.
He also postured in a way to make you believe that something that happened didn't happen.
It's true.
He also postured in that way, if that's even posturing or if that's just flat out lying and dishonest.
Salk, you must hate yourself. You must. You are Sherm. Being so angry all the time is what you live for. Sorry, smarter than you, though. That must sting. Well, there you go. You got me. Life is hard being me. You nailed it.
Exhausting. That's why you got to nap.
Mike, Brock, why is Richard so smart? I see an articulate and opinionated individual, but how smart can he be if he really keeps pushing the questions to a fan base, San Francisco or Seattle, like we don't understand the fundamentals of this league?
Yeah.
Well, look, you can be smart and wrong at the same time. I think people do that all the time. You can absolutely be smart and wrong. I think Richard's smart.
Mm-hmm.
He's clearly a smart dude, but I also would suggest that he's wrong. Wrong on this one for sure. All right, let's answer your question. 710-710, powered by Coors Light. It's been a very testy text toy today, Brock. Mm. So we're ready to answer whatever questions you guys have. We will do it next. I'm Brock and Salk.
This is Brock and Salk. Answer the question, jerk.
Keep asking questions. Come on, I'll answer them. Come on, I'm here. I'm going to answer your questions, dang it.
Answer my question! The question, jerk!
Well, don't just stand there. Answer the question, jerk!
All right, let's go. Let's answer your questions. They've been coming in all morning, or at least for the last few minutes. 710-710, powered by Coors Light. Any question, any subject.
I'm ready for a good one here.
Yeah?
Yeah. I'm focused.
Okay, hold on. Let's get into this. Jerks, I can't find a decent tasting wheat bread. Any recommendations? Mm. Wheat bread doesn't taste that great in general. Like, it's something
like
you suffer.
Is it Dave's? Super Dave's?
Yeah, Dave's bread. Is that wheat? It's a lot of like seeded.
There's
bread.
A lot of variety.
It's got different, yeah.
That's what I got for my lunch today.
Yeah, Dave's. There's a huge.
Sprouted
I'm
grains.
Shocked you buy Dave's, Howdy.
How much? What?
I'm shocked you buy.
Why?
Dave's
it's available
bread.
At Costco too.
It's so
it's
expensive.
Costco and my it's wife buys it.
Still expensive, even at Costco. How much bread
okay,
you
don't know Costco prices.
No,
stop telling
don't.
People what yep. things cost at Costco.
Good point. You don't know.
I hate going in there so much.
That's too bad. You're missing out on life.
It's hell.
One of my... yet again, another just
we buy stuff there, but I just hate it in there.
Oh, love it.
It's
I can go
madness.
To Costco every day.
Every my day. Wife takes our kids to Costco just to get out of the house.
Like, I was so bummed we didn't stop by the Cabo Costco. We will be doing that next year.
I've bought stuff
yes,
at the Cabo
just to
Costco.
See it. Check it yeah. out. See what's there. It's incredible.
A lot of margarita mix.
Maybe.
They have the largest margarita mix section in as any Costco.
Probably do.
I know there are people who are obsessed with it. Going, just getting to the parking lot makes me queasy.
Oh, the fruits, the vegetables, the proteins, the Super Dave's, everything's there.
It's just Dave's.
Phenomenal. It's super.
How yeah. much does a loaf of Dave's bread cost at Costco?
Probably like four of them bundled together, and you can freeze a couple of them.
Oh, frozen bread.
Yes, and then you put it in your fridge, and
it's terrible.
Fine. No, it
no,
doesn't.
No, it does not.
You've never done it before. It's
frozen
great.
Bread? Oh, I sure have.
Oh,
it's not good at all.
Oh,
it's totally fine.
No, it is not.
It's absolutely fine.
No salty. Way.
You haven't done it in long enough. Yeah, I
frozen
think you
bread.
Came in the wrong perspective.
Not all
freezing
of us,
bread ruins the bread.
Not all of us can shop at the Met Market fresh
and buy
every day.
Buy a fresh either. Loaf of artisanal bread.
You guys are all sitting around talking about how you buy yes. the most expensive bread in Seattle.
At Costco.
You're what? You guys shop at Whole Foods. I know that you guys get expensive bread.
Yes.
You haven't been to Whole Foods in a while. Whole Foods has gone downhill. Everything's cheap now.
Oh, man. This is the most amazing statement ever.
Ever since Amazon bought them, it's totally different.
Whole Foods has gone down. It's affordable.
It's true.
Yeah, it's totally different now. It's a different story. You wouldn't even recognize it.
It is completely different. The onions next at Whole Foods are like falling apart.
You walk in there, you think it's a Big Five.
I think it's like an Amazon world. Totally different. It's like that grocer's outlet. Grocery outlet.
Next question.
Fucking much.
Cash and carry.
I just love you guys. You guys talk about buying the most expensive bread yeah. imaginable.
It's not the most expensive.
And then give
it's
me
not even
grief.
Close.
And give me grief for being an elitist.
You guys gosh. Splurge $4 on a loaf of bread.
But then I'm an
well,
elitist
be
because
nice.
I do too? Make no sense.
Oh, stop it, Richard. I mean, Mike.
Next question.
Jerks, other than chips and cheese, what is the most essential ingredient for a plate of nachos? I have a weird answer to this question.
Yeah.
If you're only adding one more ingredient to chips and cheese, it's probably salsa.
Yeah,
but
salsa,
I think pico. You can add a whole bunch of other ingredients and you don't need salsa.
Okay.
Does that make any sense?
Yeah.
Sour cream.
Sense. I go sour cream.
I love sour. Like, I prefer yeah. sour cream and guac yep. and you know, meats, etc. Yep. But you could make a legitimate nachos with just chips, cheese, and salsa.
Yeah.
And I don't think there's any one other thing that you can do that would make it.
Agreed.
But good.
Maybe ground beef.
Maybe. I still think. I don't know. Maybe. I don't know how to answer this question because I don't know what these things are. Goku or Vegeta? Are those like
what?
Vegetarian foods?
It's Dragon Ball Z, I think.
What's that?
It's a very popular anime cartoon.
Oh. I would honestly, my guess for what those things were was like versions of tofu. Like tofu versions of other food.
I would have never read that for fear of not knowing what
those
things
I mean. Probably shouldn't have. God knows what I just said. Good point.
Let's see if we can get Sock to say something horribly profane
I love that
in
game.
Belgium.
Yeah. Jerks.
Next question.
What's an event you had the opportunity to attend but didn't and you've regretted it forever?
Ooh, that's a good question. Dinner with Evander Holyfield?
Wonder any of you guys back there?
Interesting.
I don't have a lot of regrets in that sense.
Mine for sure is not going to see Tribe Called Quest at the Will Turn in 1998.
I was going to say, it's got to be a concert.
All my
it's
friends went to go see Tribe. I didn't go. I should have gone. I thought I had homework that I needed to do. I didn't end up doing the homework, and all my friends had the greatest night ever.
Oh, interesting.
That's number one. Still think about it.
Yeah, not, I don't know if I got that. I would like to, Molly and I will kind of kick ourselves, but you just didn't know it then, what you know now, pre-kids. And if you have the opportunity to go on trips pre-kids, you should go on them.
My mom will still talk about the fact that Felix Hernandez's game, the perfect game, it was a work trip, but she didn't go, and she will still talk about it. Sorry, Mom. I'm sorry to bring up this painful memory. But...
I'd like to go to Israel. A chance to do that. And it's like, long ways away.
It is a long way away.
Got to do that. Next.
Would you go with the whole fam?
Oh, yeah, now. Yeah.
That'd be cool.
Yeah. Like back in the day when I was playing, I was like, I'm busy. No, you were not busy. You had all of January, like all of February, like all of March. You could have gone anywhere, Italy, and done any of that stuff. Pre-kids. Idiot. An idiot. Sorry. A lot of what?
I'm just reading all the bread texts. Frozen bread is the best, Saul. Frozen bread is nasty.
No, it's not.
Freezing bread and cheese is just fine.
You take frozen bread out, and then you put it in the fridge, and it's just fine.
Guys, I'm Salk's personal in-home baker, and I promise you, he would never eat frozen bread.
Well, that's different from your pastry chef.
Yeah, obviously. Two different people. Yeah.
I mean, we did learn, like, one of your favorite trips to Cabo is when you had your own butler.
It was great.
Yeah.
Yep.
Just make guacamole nonstop.
You want to compare trips to Cabo and who has more elite experience?
Sure.
Okay. Yep. Maybe we'll dig into that.
Never had a butler.
Yeah. Okay. Okay. Butler costs us like 39 cents.
I've never had a butler.
Okay.
Next.
Unbelievable. You're
what?
Amazing.
What?
Nothing.
What?
Just you're amazing.
What, Richard?
You're an amazing
what?
Human. You're an amazing human.
Thank you. Appreciate that.
I love you, man.
Good.
I really do.
Good.
Only you. Only you.
Great.
Salk, if you were to take Phil Simms out for local cuisine in Seattle, where would you take him? Where would you take Phil Simms here in Seattle? Probably something like June Baby. Something southern. Seem like a good fit for Phil. Something folksy.
I bet he likes barbecue. I don't know why, but
because everybody likes barbecue.
Yeah.
But, I mean,
you
not
been
really
out
a
Stan's
local
barbecue.
Place. I've had their food.
The sushi place.
The place. I think Al would be a little tougher. What are you doing Sunday? Oh, you're out at the waste management. That's right.
Yeah. Can't wait. Watching golf. Then I'll watch Super Bowl after.
Maybe.
We'll see. Hanging out with Joel. We'll see what Joel wants. I'm sure Joel wants to watch Super Bowl. The fraudulent LA Rams.
We're going to have an open phone line tomorrow. We're still doing that on Fridays?
We are. It worked out well last week, despite a lot of trepidation heading into it. Yeah, there were a lot of good calls last week.
You think G's going to mosey in?
G can't wait. That's the highlight of his week, coming in to hang out with us at 8 o'clock.
And then you get 3 hours to talk all about the Super Bowl. You can't wait to watch. Let's do it.
We'll see you guys tomorrow morning at 7 a.m. Till then,
it's in the barn.
See everybody. You haven't been to Whole Foods in a while. Whole Foods has gone downhill. Everything's cheap now. It is completely different. The onions at Whole Foods are like falling apart.
You walk in there, you think it's a Big Five.
Totally different.